I'm Gab. He's Jules. It's the Gab and Jules Show. It's blue skies over West London after incessant rain, possibly because Aston Villa have their new manager.
Yes.
And it's Stevie G.
Woo-hoo.
Back to the Premier League. We're going to get into that. Obviously, we've got a bunch of other stuff. Paul Pogba out for 6 to 8 weeks. You're making a sad face. Yeah, Paul Scholes is making a happy face because he thinks it's good for Manchester United. Go figure. Different strokes, different folks. We've got all the qualifiers, a lot at stake for Spain, for Italy.
Crazy story at PSG and the women team.
Wild story of PSG. I was going to laugh, but it's not a funny story at all. But first, I'm delighted that we are joined by Nadim Anua. Nadim, we're gonna talk about Stevie G at the top, and then we're going to get into what I think is a service piece for people, right?
Yep.
People want to become professional footballers.
Or their children.
They want their children, right? So this is going to be Nadim Anua's guide to how to make your child into a professional millionaire footballer. Right?
No,
work for him, work for anybody.
Exactly.
Let's start with the Stevie G thing, because it had been in the air. Nadim, I want to start with you, because you have Villa in the situation where they have owners who have a lot of money. They've got a great legacy. And they go north of the border to Steven Gerrard. Now, Gerrard is one of those guys who, you know, even when he was playing, it's inevitable to make the parallel with Lampard, so let's do it. People said, oh, great leader, whatever else. He's had experience inside the club. He's a one-club man. He's a successful club. He goes to another club, a big club, where maybe in some ways it's easier to win, but has success there. Is this a formula that works, or do you not actually know until you chuck him into a club where, you know, he's not automatically in the top two, but he's in the top 15?
I think in regards to him going up to Rangers, one thing that was key with him, because at the time, this was before I went to the USA, actually, there was talk that I was going to go to them, and I spoke to him, spoke to a director of football and stuff. And the big push was that they want to bring back success to Rangers. And he said, you want to be a part of when we finally win something again. So when he went up there, even though it seems obvious now that Rangers are, you know, one of the dominant sides, they weren't necessarily that when he first went up there. So there was a sense of pressure there. And if it would have gone wrong, then his stock would have been so, so low, because it would have been more domination by Celtic and so on. But the fact is, I think people have been looking at him because of the way that Scottish football has changed, and obviously the reasons for that with Celtic and so on. But Rangers have performed well overall and gotten better year on year. And if they committed to him, and now you can see that it's a club and sort of a team that's in his own identity, from the way they play to, you know, just the way that they carry themselves. So I think it was interesting that he went up there, but credit to him, because he stayed in the job a long time now. And so this thing of coming down to Villa, I do kind of get it. And I think it's a shame for Rangers, because it's such a big club. But the thing which they don't have, which Villa do, is the Premier League. You know, and for someone like Steven Gerrard, you can't turn your nose up at that, can you really?
Jules, it's a building job, right? And he built at Rangers. I think Nadim made a great point. For people who don't follow Scotland, you take for granted, oh, well, there's two big clubs and one or the other wins every year. Not so much, because Rangers obviously went bust. They had to crawl back. They had some very, very lean years. And he helped take them back part of the way back.
Yeah, completely. I mean, Celtic were on 9 titles in a row when he broke that, and to win last season, the first one in 10 years for Rangers. And I commentated on the game against Lyon in the Europa League for French television. I was really impressed, even if they lost the game, the way he set up, the way his football played.
They lost to Peter Bosz.
It was a really good game. The way he improved players, Alfredo Morelos, of course, Ryan Kent, many others. He's got a lot of experience at Rangers, but I think he looks at this Aston Villa squad and thinks, you know what, I can do a lot of good things with this squad. This is a really good squad. Yeah, they've lost 5 in a row in the Premier League under Dean Smith, but this is a really good squad. I think he wanted an opportunity in the Premier League. He got it now. There's pressure, but there's also not so much pressure. Well, I think he made a lot of sense. It's a logical pathway, I think, in his development.
One of the defining things about Villa for me, and some of the choices that they made at the top, was we all praise Christian Perslow when he came out and just explained the sale of Grealish in very simple terms. I'd love it if more club officials had the guts to go and do that rather than just trotting out the manager every time. But he said, you know, we've sold one player for a lot of money and we're able to bring in 3 or 4 guys who we hope can be as good. That's kind of a pretty standard formula when you're trying to just kind of move your way up. But I want to ask you, Jules said he has a good squad. In terms of the players he has to work with, his first impact is going to be to do a better job with this group of players than Dean Smith has done of late. Are these players that good? Nate, I mean, you don't have to be kind, but like, tell me, like,
are there good.
No, okay.
Tell me who's not good.
Let me turn this around. Tell me how many squads in the Premier League, and you can take a minute to think about it, Jules, while Nate answers, have clearly better squads than Villa.
I think the situation with Villa was at the start of last season, they were doing exceptionally well. And I think in this sort of calendar year of 2021, they've fallen off quite a bit, but the squad still basically remains the same, barring one person. So for them, they've seen that level of performance and they believe in themselves. I think they do have a good squad. I don't think they're like a top... I don't think they're a top six squad. I don't really think they're a top eight squad, but I think they can be pushing in and around mid-table.
So mid-table, mid-table to find success?
I think they're between six and eight.
Between six and eight?
Yeah.
Wait. You mean outside of six?
Outside six and between, yes.
So
yeah.
Between seven, eight, something
like that.
Yeah, so that implies that they're ahead of or on a par with Leicester, Spurs, teams like that in your mind.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go. The bar has been set, Stevie G. We know you're a regular listener. We wish you all the best. I do think growing up for me, I remember... I don't remember it because I was too young, but I remember reading of Aston Villa as the European champions. And to me, that is always kind of where it's been. They finished second, of course, since then. I think under Brian Little, maybe. Or maybe it was somebody else. I don't know. It was a long time ago. You want to see them back among the big clubs where they belong. Okay, so this Steven Gerrard news is very, very new. We agree mid-table. Is that a fair result for what I think the expectation is going to be for Aston Villa this season?
Yeah, I think so. I think it'd be interesting to see. He plays attacking football. Certainly that was the case at Rangers.
Wait, sorry. Can I take a step back? It's kind of hard if you're Rangers or Celtic.
I don't think so. I don't think you change.
Kind of hard to play defensive football? No.
Yeah. Right. But I think, you know, if you look at Rangers' play with Tavernier on... as right full back and left full back, whether it's Bassi or Barisic, they're very attacking full backs. I think the whole team, I think that's the mindset. And I don't see why he would change at Villa. He has to make the defense stronger because they've conceded goals. Their expected goals against, I think, is quite high. And they haven't scored many. So I think there's a lot of work to be done there, and especially for the new signing from the summer to hit form, Buendia, Leon Bailey, those kind of players, because I still think they're way below what they should bring to that team.
Well, they had a bunch of injuries too.
Yeah. But I really think that a top 10 is doable and should be the target, and I think he can achieve that 100%.
Nathan, last word on Gerrard. We often talk about sort of coaching trees and things players take from their coaches when they become coaches. Now, you're not coaching professionally.
Yes.
Yet. I mean, you may never. But you've had teammates.
You will. He will be. You can tell he's going to be a manager. You will.
You've had.
Jules, relax. No.
You've had former teammates and stuff who've done it. I think, obviously, you take a lot from managers who've influenced you. Yeah. But I find this an interesting topic because if I look at who would have influenced Gerrard, if Gerrard was so attacking at Rangers, you imagine that even though Liverpool fans don't like him, he probably did get a few things from Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah.
Obviously, Gerard Houllier early in his career.
Yeah.
I'm guessing Dalglish as a little boy, and then obviously when he came back.
Yeah.
And then obviously...
Roy Hodgson, not so much.
Roy Hodgson, maybe not quite so much. You know, and then obviously Rafa, who, you know, very different in many approaches.
Yeah.
But there's always that dynamic. And I want to ask you, Nathan, what's your take on this, the way some people always go back and reference people they played for? I mean, you certainly get the sense that every former United player has to go back and talk about Sir Alex Ferguson. But there's also others who say, well, no, I'm going to pay attention to what's happening elsewhere. And I'm going to try to get influences, figure out what best practice is out there beyond my own experience.
Yeah, I think the better coaches these days are the ones who look outside as well. Because I think if you go off what's happened to you in the past, like the game changes so quickly, almost feels like it's year on year. If you're going to say that what somebody was doing 20 years ago is the best method going forward now, it won't be, because as well, the playing staff are different. the players playing football today see the game in a different way to people did 20 years ago. So you can't just instill those beliefs into them now because they won't buy into them. I think you have to adapt over time. And I think one thing about, say, Gerrard, he's had all the managers which he's had, but then I think speaking to others, he was almost like a coach when he was on the field anyway, and the way he carried himself. And that was in his club, understanding those players. And one thing he has in his favour, in fact, two things. So when he goes into that Villa dressing room, even though people haven't seen him do well managerially in England, everyone in there understands who he is. And he's one of the few players where I imagine people will be desperate to gain his trust and respect from early doors, even though he's unproven in that position. Because I think they look up to him for, say, what he did in his career and so on. And the second part of it, which for me is like another reason why he went there, it must be so interesting. This is one of the reasons why I won't be a manager. This is probably going to be one of the only times in Steven Gerrard's career, potentially, where he's headhunted over looking for a job because he's been sacked somewhere else. You know, that feeling of being wanted by another team, I think that can make it very hard to say no, because when you look at most managers that appear on these lists, they're only available because they've lost a job before.
And the objective is Liverpool, to become one day the Liverpool manager. It's harder to go from Rangers and get that Liverpool job with the confidence and the sort of resume that you should have to get the Liverpool job, then if you go and have two really good years at Villa or three really good years, then Klopp retires, yeah, and then it's yours. Do you see what I mean? There's not even a debate. There's no discussion. You come and you take over, and then you do well, you don't do well.
It is. No, I agree with you. It is a step in the ladder. All right, we're gonna move on to something else in a minute, but I just want to share my Stephen Gerrard story. Almost a Gerrard.
Okay, I've got one for you as well.
All right, we're all going to have Gerrard. All right, why don't you go first? Because I want my story to be the last.
Okay, good. So Stevie G was working at BT Sport as a pundit before going into coaching with Rangers. He was already working with the Liverpool youth teams. And we used to share the same green room when we were doing the Gold Show, and he was doing the main games and the main show. Although he said, I would love it to go on the Gold Show with you and see all the goals, etc. Anyway, and we sat there, and as you know, on Tuesday and Wednesday on Champions League night, you also have in the afternoon the Youth League games. And now I'm always watching the PSG youth team. So I'm there watching PSG on my own, and there's a lot of other people like Rio Ferdinand and Frank Lampard. Everybody's there, but I'm the only one watching the Youth League. And then he comes and sits next to me and said, "Oh, who's playing?" So I said, "Oh, you know, this is the PSG under 19 against, can't remember what team, blah, blah, blah." And he started watching with me and asking me literally details on every youngster that he could watch. Well, what about him? Who is he? You know, does he play for France? Where is he from? What are the qualities? What's the flows? What are they working on? Who's the coach from? Like literally hundreds of questions. I was like, "Oh, okay, Stevie, I know, I watched them." But
yeah. So and I hope you said, "Hey, but no, I'm Paris born and bred. I'm a Paris Saint-Germain fan. I'm not going to tell you so you can steal them and take them to Liverpool."
But then 2 weeks later, We sat in the same place, and he said, "You know what, I remember some of the names you said, and I looked them up, and so-and-so is really good. So-and-so, I watched the last game, was a bit disappointed." And I was amazed, and I think he would be a really good manager because the knowledge is fantastic of the game, but also of everything around it, including young players from other clubs. And I was really surprised.
And clearly the work ethic.
Because
I think we can say this, I don't want to out anybody, but we have met a lot of great ex-players who become managers and who realize, hey, this is actually a ton of work. Now, just quickly, my Steven Gerrard story was after the night of Istanbul. The game finished absurdly late. Also, it was a weird time zone and whatever. We had the opportunity afterwards, some colleagues and I, to go by the Liverpool team hotel. They'd all got back and celebrations had been underway. And, you know, Rafa and the Spanish coaches are all eating late because they eat stupidly late in Spain. Carragher's, you know, being Carragher, talking to everybody, jumping around. And there's Steven Gerrard sitting by himself on one of those low-slung chairs, like the kind you might see in an airport lounge. The European Cup is on a table next to him. And he's just sitting there, he looked catatonic. He looked completely drained. He's just sitting there staring at the cup, not moving. And I said, "All right, he must be having a moment." And then I was talking to somebody else, and every time I'd look up, he was just sitting there and just not moving. And I was just kind of imagining what was processing in his brain. Mm. Everybody was respectful of his moment. Nobody came up to talk to him. I mean, I'm sure they congratulated him before, whatever. But it just really stuck with me, that moment of communing with the cup or whatever went through him, how drained he was. Maybe his mind went back to obviously not leaving Liverpool, the choice he made to stay, all this other stuff. It was just a really, really moving moment. I want to move on to something else. And Nadim, you're going to help us with this because, well, A, you have a book out, which I haven't read. Because
it's not out yet. It's not out yet. It comes out in March.
Okay. The reason, but come on. Everybody knows I go to steal people's books for free on the Tor browser, on the dark web. And as you know, the galleys of that book are already out. Mm-hmm.
And you're hoping that Nadim sends you a copy, right?
I hope he gets a signed one. I actually do read football books. But no, I just want to ask you about something else, because we often talk about youth development and how kids become footballers, yep, become professional footballers. And I think a lot of our audience, they don't really always know the process, because, you know,
I think they think academy and then you make your debut, yeah, for the first team. It's more complicated than that.
It's a lot more complicated than that. I also think when it comes to youth development, a ton, I'm always on the nature of your nurture debate. I'm really at the nature end of the spectrum. Like, I don't care how many La Masia geniuses you have. If somebody doesn't have a whole set of basic tools, then they're not going to be great. And if you as a club aren't great at attracting those kids with the basic tools, doesn't matter how good your coaches are, they're not going to amount to anything. So, Nadim, let me ask you this. First of all, I'm assuming, to cast your mind back 30 years, did you want to be a professional footballer then, or did you want to be something
else? No, I didn't know. For me personally, like, I think my story may be a bit different, but...
Which is what makes it interesting. Tell us your story and juxtapose it with Joe Blow, average Premier League footballer.
Well, yeah, so from my side, education was always the first thing for me. So I was in school, but I happened to play for the academy. And at the same time, I was playing for school and I was doing a track and field as well. But I was only ever allowed to play and train and stuff like that if I was doing my school stuff properly. So there was never a case of all the eggs going to that footballing basket, even though I was one of the best players in my age group. And I was playing 2 years up and stuff like that.
Back up a minute, because that's when you're... Let me take you back to when you were even younger, right? Mm-hmm. How did you end up at the academy at Manchester City?
So I was playing... I played for my primary school a year in advance. Played for the primary school team a year early. And the coach gave me, like, a sheet of paper which had, like, three teams... numbers on it or whatever. So I just...
And again, sorry, for those who don't know, sorry, I have to fill in the basket. Primary school in England means up to elementary school, right? So up to 11, 12, right?
Up to 11, yeah. So I was playing at like 9, I think. I was playing for my school team at 9. And as I say, the coach gave me a number of some local teams, basically, some local youth teams. So I called it the first one, which was AFC Clayton. And I ended up playing for them, and I was playing for my age group and the age group above. And interestingly, my age group was pretty good. The age group above, we were very bad. So we lost every game except for two in the season. We'd lose like 9, 10, 11 ones. We'd always score the one, but it was always like quite high. But for the other team, like, it was the exact opposite. And I remember after my first year, for playing for both, I had like most man of the matches, most this. I had most goals. I was playing defense. I had most goals, most whatevers, like everything. It was like a clean sweep. It's like, I don't know. I can't even describe it, but... I didn't get scouted until the next year, and it was in a cup competition we just won. And my dad told me after the game, oh, such and such from Man City has been in contact, and they say that they want you to go and try out for them, basically. This was when I was 10.
But you knew already at 10 that you were good, right? You could see, and people were telling you that you were clearly talented.
Yeah, I was good because I was the best player in that team, but I wasn't like... It wasn't because I was doing all the skills and stuff like this. Maybe it's because I was stronger or whatever, but like I was good anyway. But I got scouted for City then, and I went to do the trial. Did the trial a few days later. Then I played in the first game the week after. I scored 5 goals on my debut because now I was playing as a striker. I went from a defender to a striker straight away. But it was only around then that my father told me that there was actually another scout that scouted me after that cup final. It was Manchester United. But my dad said to them, he probably doesn't want to play for you because he supports City. And this is mid-90s, and I can tell you for a fact, there was no reason to support City in the mid-90s. So
thanks, Dad. That. Thank you.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Things worked out quite well. But so, yeah, I joined the academy when I... In fact, it wasn't an academy. It was a center of excellence. And after I signed, the next month it turned into an academy. So Man City weren't exactly at the forefront of, like, youth-level football anyway. And over the years, we went from being probably a very average team nationally to, by the time I was leaving the academy, we were probably one of the top 5 in the country.
So can you just describe, though, for those who don't know, like, when you're in that age group, let's say when you got to be 14, for the many people out there who think that they'll have kids will be joining academies, like, you went to your normal school. They don't. I know some academies have like schools that they're attached to, some of which are kind of, you know, slightly fugazi schools. Others are legit schools.
In France, you go to school in the academy. It's not a separate school.
Yeah, I'm sure you go straight from the PSG Academy school to Le Grand Ecole as well.
No, it's the teacher that comes to your academy. No, but everything, this is a very important detail that we'll explain after.
Okay, we could discuss your past to professional football. I'm just kidding.
You know, it's a very important detail.
Yeah, but that's changed now. Like, more from the younger ages now, you are attached to a school. I think for Man City, you join one of the local schools, and it's a private school. It's basically paid for up until you're 16, I think.
Yeah.
But for me, I was in my school, and same for everybody else, and we trained two times a week and then play on a Saturday. That's all we were doing until probably under 14, 15, where sometimes then you might get the call up to go and play for the under-17s at a weekend, which was very, very different, to say the least.
So until really under-17s level, you're only basically training, what, 3-4 hours a week and then playing games?
Basically, yeah. That's basically it, yeah.
But the big difference...
It's going to be different with elsewhere, right?
The big difference, I find in England is that you cannot go to an academy that is further than 90 minutes away driving to where you live. In France, in Italy, everywhere, Kylian Mbappé goes from Paris, living in Paris, to the Monaco Academy, there's no problem. There's no local restriction.
It's always changing. Like in Italy now, you need a special dispensation unless you're 16 years old and whatever else. I think there are different. You know, it is evolving. What they don't want to happen is obviously, you know, uprooting a whole bunch of 12-year-olds halfway across the country. Which is what happened many years ago to Roberto Mancini, famous story, and also Messi. You know, that's the idea of the well-being.
But that's why in France, you go to the academy, you sleep there, that's your home, the teacher come there, that's your school as well, and then you train there. So everything, much more than Nedum, who used to go home and then goes to school and then goes to training, taken by his parents, a city, because they live close. It's very different in France, for example.
So one of the side effects of this is, presumably all your teammates were local kids from the Manchester area. Now, you said education was very important. You were still going to school, presumably getting good grades, presumably studying. The fact that you're only training 4 hours a week, I assume that made things a lot easier. If you had to go and travel to the games and travel to training and also keep producing academically at a high level, that would have been difficult.
Yeah, that did make it easier. But then around that sort of time, like, you could maybe say there's not correlation, but I'd say most people who I played with in and around the academy between the age of like 14 and 16 that were good lost interest with education, because I almost felt like they were just counting down until they could go to training, or counting down until they can go and play in a game. So the educational side, they didn't really invest into it, because for them, like, they could sense that the next stage was there. Because if you make it in, as soon as you turn 16, like, you're on the youth team deal, so you're now full time. Like, they knew that was going to be their first job.
Money as well. I think psychologically earning money must be a big thing.
Yeah,
but equally, you know, as you know, because I've asked you this before, but you know, I always ask professional footballers, at what stage did you stop being the best player on your team? I'm assuming if it's most of the players are 14 to 16.
Mm.
Yeah, they knew their next phase might, you know, they had a good shot at getting a youth team contract and start earning money and go full time. Equally, I'm assuming, did they not have people around them saying, like, listen, there's a whole bunch of people who were scholars or whatever, I know the terms change over the years, play 16 to 19, and they don't play professionally, like, not even in League Two or the conference.
Of course.
Like, the numbers are still stacked against you at that stage, right?
Yeah, so there's talk of that, but I think some of the people who I saw who were praised the highest when I was like between, say, 10 and 14, by the time they were 19, they were nowhere near the first team. But it's hard to say to somebody when they're 14, who's like one of the best, if not the best, that there's a good chance that they won't make it, because all they'll see around them is them being better than everybody else. Yeah. But I think that's when the sort of difference in mentality comes, whereby for some, they know they're better than everybody else, but they try and maintain it by continually getting better, whereas for others, they just go within themselves and they just want to continually do the same things they were doing before. Because now, like, especially now, that academy is a big business. 14-year-olds are going to be looked at by agents from here, there, and everywhere, because you know you might be bought here, move to this place, have a deal which is worth this. And like, I think over the years, from when I started, the concept of this is a good debate point. Within football, when have you made it? Because when you think about the way the football is, how essentially, you know, you don't need to be rich to play football throughout most of the world. If you can sign a professional contract which changes the life of yourself and your family forever, does it matter that you didn't make it into a first team? Because in the past, it was always a case of like, psychologically, you've only made it when you've played for two seasons, three seasons, 100 games, this, that, and the other. But if you're now able to move your whole family and you've changed everything, based on the money that's like generational, but then come 19, you're away. Like, what does that mean?
True, but if you end up playing in League Two, this is not life changing for your family. You earn, good money. You earn 2,000 a week, 1,500 a week, but this is not a Premier League contract.
I think there's a slightly different way of looking at it, though, and maybe this is what Nathan was hinting at, right? Young people all start at different starting points, right? So, if you come from a middle-class background with parents who really push education and so on, and you give something up on the education side to play football, and you don't make it as a professional and it delays your educational side or whatever, you could argue that, you know, even if you do play in League Two for a while, League One, you haven't really made it. By the same token, if you come from a broken home in a very deprived area, just by going through the system, even if you don't never play professional football and you leave, or you just sign your youth contract at 19, you're out of the game, you're probably still better off than you might have been where you grew up if you've been hanging out on the street corner and not going to school anyway.
Yeah.
Is that kind of,
but the added bit of nuance today compared to when I was playing was that in terms of academy football, there was never really that much money that was available then. But now you could be in the system because it goes up to 23s, and you could have earned millions without playing for the first team. You know, that's the thing. So an academy contract, if you sign a pro at, say, a Man City or at a Chelsea or stuff like this, like, even though it might not necessarily set you on the path to become a professional footballer elsewhere or for your team, you've made life-changing money. So I think that's why there's so much sort of investment with agents and, you know, parents doing everything they can to make sure that the kid gets this opportunity and so on. Because, like, I say it's hard to begrudge them that, because you could be, there's some players who I've seen over the years who, like, if they were to leave a city or whatever in the academy to go on loan, they go to try and play their first ever games on a professional pyramid, and they'd be earning the most money of anybody in the football club if they're going on loan to the Championship, League One, League Two. And that, like, that system is nuts, but that's where we're at right now. So the academy system, it's changed a lot.
The academy system is brutal for the kids. I mean, Nathan obviously never got released, but he would have had a lot of friends who got released, and that's brutal, and some never come back from it.
No.
Never at all.
No.
Some do at lower levels, some go back, like Declan Rice or, you know, others, and still make it. But the question I had, Nathan, is like, was there a point, a conversation between you and your parents of how far can you get? Because I remember when I was 17, and I was in the squad with the first team, the club I was playing at, under 19 team, which was in the top division in France. But then I was also in the squad for the first team that were playing the fourth division with training and some games that I played with them. And my dad basically said, and it's quite brutal to be fair, I laugh at it now, but he said, listen, you're never going to make it in Ligue 1. So if it's for you to play fourth or third division in France, there's no point. Better go and study and have a proper job. And that's basically where my aspirations and my hope of becoming a professional footballer at 17 pretty much stops. And in fairness, he was probably right. I don't think I could have made it higher than fourth, maybe third division at best. And so my question to you was, did you have that chat with your dad, and your dad said, okay, I think we can tell that now it looks like you're going to go to the top and that's worth it? Because then is it worth it to push your son and then he ends up playing in the National League? No offense, nothing wrong with the National League or League Two, but it's not the same, let's be honest here.
I think it depends on the parent and the child, because for some children, whatever, maybe the money they'll earn just at any level in professional ranks is more than what they think they could earn just in general life anyway. But for me personally, I think I was lucky because I started so early. So I made my debut just before I turned 18. So I went in full time, but I was still doing my A-levels, which is like junior college or whatever in America. So the educational side was still happening as I was progressing. if I would have finished my education and I still wouldn't have been anywhere near the first team, then maybe questions could have been asked. Instead, I'd played a couple of seasons and then, like, I'd finished my education. So the call is, like, do you quit Manchester City's first team to go and go to university? Or do you just stay in the first team and continue playing in the Premier League? It's like, well, that one kind of looks
that's
after
pretty
itself.
Obvious, yeah,
yeah, well, exactly.
But the right, final question for me to wrap this, because it is an interesting conundrum, right? You gave something up academically.
Mm-hmm.
Or do you feel like you did, in the sense that if you hadn't been blessed with the ability to play football, and of course the work ethic and all the stuff that goes with it to make it professionally, if you had simply focused on studies, I mean, obviously you achieved a lot academically relative to most mm-hmm. English pros, but who knows? Maybe, do you ever feel like maybe I could have gone to a better school, which would have led to a better university? Maybe I would have been a professor of some such right now.
Yeah,
maybe I could
have. Surgeon,
Does that thought ever enter your mind? The opportunity cost. The football gave you a ton, right? But it obviously took you or delayed something for you. You could go back to university. You could go to university now, I suppose, if you wanted to, right?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. And I do look back and I wish I had a degree. I don't know what the degree would be in, but the wish for having it is just, I don't know, maybe it's like an ego thing, because I was on the path towards achieving that anyway. And the fact is, like, looking back, the 16 years I had as a professional were life-changing for myself, my direct family, everyone, like every single bit of it. And to think that maybe I could have traded that off for more of like a status thing in terms of being a professor of whatever, I don't know. Like, I was good in school. I wasn't like Sir Isaac Newton or anything like that. So I'm not.
You're setting the bar kind of high.
I know.
Right?
You're saying like, many people are.
Yeah, I know.
So like, playing football as a professional for 16 years in the Premier League, Championship, MLS, internationally, whatever. Like, it's a real privilege. That's a 1%er type thing, and I enjoyed every second of it. Looking back, even through the like toughest of times, because it changes your perception on things. Even like, I wouldn't be here talking to you guys and so many other people. I wouldn't have seen all the coaches that I would have seen. And all this, if I would have continued just doing what I thought I was supposed to do by going to university and studying economics, because I did maths, business studies, and IT for my A-levels, you know. Like, I this football thing, it was a true, true gift, and I'm still probably reaping the rewards now, to be honest.
No, but maybe you would have invented the Tinder app before
maybe.
Somebody else.
Exactly.
And then you'd be
like Jeff Bezos right now.
Yeah, we'd be working for you right now.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Nadim, it's been a privilege. Thanks so much.
No worries at all.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Nadim, enough Stevie G. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gav.
Paul Pogba picked up an injury that will see him ruled out for 6 to 8 weeks. Jules, judging from the reaction that some of the English commentary I can't tell if this is good news or bad news for Manchester United.
In fairness, I don't really care what they think. I'm more worried about Paul and his fitness. If you look at the way he got injured, I don't know if he didn't warm up properly before that. It's just a shot, and straight away, you can tell he feels his thigh, his quads. This is not good. He's going through a bad patch between the sending off, losing his place, kind of in the United team. And as such a key part of the season where his future is undecided and up in the air.
I mean, I don't think it affects him so much in terms of his future, in the sense that
he was going with the national team really for a breath of fresh air.
No, I'm not, I'm not saying it's good, but I'm saying is he can come back in January. He can play a little bit. He'll still be a free agent. You know, I think that'll come back. I do think just the amount of abuse he's received from certain United ex-players has been.
And you can't tell me that United are a better team without him than with him. That's what I said.
Is it good news? Do you think we'll see more Donny van de Beek?
Well, I hope so, but I doubt it. Liverpool director of football Michael Edwards said very little during his time in charge at the club, but now he said plenty in an open letter to the fans, Gab, including who his favourite player is, who his successor will be as he's leaving at the end of the season, and why he's leaving, indeed.
I'm absolutely fascinated by this guy. Like, he's like the dude at meetings who doesn't say anything and then all of a sudden goes and blah, 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 blah.
Because that was long. That was a long letter.
But you know what? I thought it was heartfelt and I thought it was important.
Yeah.
And I think the work he's done in this time speaks far more than anything he could have said in this time period. He really was a critical part. I mean, still is because he hasn't left yet. He wouldn't say his favorite player was, although he says he has a dog named Bobby, which I think speaks clearly about that. And there is a great story again. I had the opportunity at the Stats Bomb conference to hear that too. We heard the guy explain the story about how they ended up with Firmino, which is, you know, I think a really good combination of eye test and analytics and good scouting.
How much the data helped them, yeah.
Yeah, and Edwards brought it all together. His successor is a guy named Julian Ward.
Julian's always good. He can only be good.
He seems cut from the same cloth and already, you know, has a lot of influence, apparently. And why he's leaving was the part I thought was most interesting. He said, I told myself I would never stay more than 10 years in a job. Yeah. This sounds kind of Silicon Valley-ish, kind of like, disruption, change, blah, blah, blah.
5 years is a long time, all of that. Yeah.
But, you know, good for him.
And good luck to him. We said, I think a lot of clubs, small, medium, large, should look at him and try to hire him.
And I think many are. Xavi got to work at Barcelona, and he's already making waves, Jules.
He's got his new set of rules, Gab, 10 rules. It's probably an indication of the mess that was before under the Dutch guy. But you have to arrive on time 2 hours before training starts, or an hour and a half. You have to all have lunch together at the training grounds. You can't go skiing.
None of this is revolutionary.
Clubs are doing it. I don't know why people get crazy like Stevie Nicol on the FC show going like, oh, this is ridiculous. No, this is the same in every club.
I know. The one interesting thing was, I mean, he's also asking the players to be a little bit more careful when they speak. And Gerard Piqué reportedly cancelling an interview, out of respect for that. Yeah.
The Premier League has set up a working party to regulate what they call related party sponsorships. Gab, this could have a major effect on several clubs, including Manchester City, Newcastle or Everton, which is basically, you can't really have a sponsor owned by your owner sponsoring your club.
Yeah, or a related party or where you have a significant shareholding. I mean, it's relevant with Everton because their owner has relations with the company that sponsors the training ground and so on. Obviously, it was a big thing with Paris Saint-Germain and City in the past vis-a-vis UEFA. The idea is simply, you know, we're going to go and we're going to assess this at what we consider to be fair market value. It can't be kind of like a backhand way to inject money in the club. If you want to put money in, it's got to be via equity. The interesting thing is, you know who's on this working party?
No.
Amanda Staveley.
Oh.
All right, what you gonna, it's fair enough. You want to make rules that, it's not like she's going to have veto power or whatever.
No, but still.
But clearly this is a response to Newcastle, and I think to some degree towards City as well, who obviously are in a different place right now. Sticking with Newcastle, Eddie Howe was officially unveiled as manager. He said the goal was to entertain and to avoid relegation. What else is he going to say?
Exactly.
And perhaps, predictably, dodge questions about Saudi Arabia and human rights.
Yeah, and we respect the question that had to be asked. You can see why he sort of dodged it and not responded.
I respect him for avoiding it,
exactly.
too.
Exactly. Well, he's not going to say it. But I would have loved him to say it. We're going to be boring and lose all the games. Steven Gerrard, as we explained before, has moved to Aston Villa. But Gab, you've got an issue with managers changing clubs halfway through the season.
Yeah, very simply. Villa are going to have to pay £3 million. I'm not saying Villa broke any rules or anybody or anything like that. They're operating within the rules. I'm just saying the rules are stupid. I think there should be, if you want to call it, a transfer window for managers who are in work.
But how would that work?
Simple. You can't leave during. You can't leave in the middle of the season.
Well, so if you've got a bad manager and bad result, you have to keep him until the end, until that transfer window.
No, Jules. If you have a bad manager, you can still sack him and you can replace him with another manager. It can be one of the many out of work managers or an interim manager or whatever. But you can't go and disrupt another club like that. Now, in this case, if Gerrard goes to Rangers and he says, "Look, you know, I have this offer from Villa. I'm going to take it." Rangers should be entitled to say, okay, fine. So then you either sit out until the end of the season, or we continue paying you, or you stay and you manage, or whatever, or they give the permission. But it shouldn't be something where, you know, with compensation, because it's just incredibly disruptive. Even just
it doesn't happen that often either.
I know. I just don't think it should be. I just don't think it should happen at all.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Cristiano Ronaldo is Portugal playing a few hours away to Ireland. Now, they're 2 points behind Serbia in the qualifying group. Means that even if they win, Sunday's Portugal-Serbia game will decide everything.
It's huge. I mean, they've got a game in hand. So if they beat Ireland, then they go over Serbia, and then a draw would be enough. But still.
You can still lose. Nothing's guaranteed.
No, exactly. It's a very talented Serbia team. We saw a very eventful reverse fixture, Serbia, Portugal. Remember Cristiano's goal, not given. He throws the armband, he leaves the pitch before the end. All of that, loads of drama coming up in that group. It's going to be cool.
There's a lot of drama between Manchester United and this, and chasing Christian Sinclair's record. A lot of drama for Cristiano.
Yeah, huge game for Italy as well on Friday, Gab, as they host Switzerland. They're level on points with the Swiss. They have a better goal difference, plus 12 to plus 10, but also have loads of injuries. No Pellegrini, no Zaniolo, no Immobile, no Chiellini as well. Are you tense? Are you a bit tense?
You are a little tense because you tell yourself that, okay, well, it's fine. We got 2 out of 3 results. A draw should be okay because, you know, the final group games, they could make up the goal difference. It's going to be tough. But equally, I'm tense. And, you know, out of all those guys who are missing, the one who breaks my heart is Zaniolo because I think he's a difference maker. But the one who's going to be most important, I'm sorry, it's not Chiellini. As great as he's been, great as he is in one game, it's Ciro Immobile, because now he's apparently leaning Belotti.
More than the first nine.
Boy, that's the alternative. You go Raspadori, Berardi. It's tough. They have to.
It is tough.
You are against it. Now, remind everybody who doesn't know, if you finish second in the group, you go through the playoffs. Yes. Problem with the playoffs is anything can happen.
And it's a one-leg playoff. It's
mano a mano. That's right. So. Jules, it's pretty tight in Group G. Ooh. Holland have 19 points. Norway 17. Turkey 15. The latter two countries have winnable games on Saturday. Could be slightly trickier for the Dutch because, of course, they're playing Montenegro away while Norway play Latvia and Turkey host Gibraltar. No disrespect. That we could have the same situation next week, Holland v Norway, absolutely massive.
I know, but you know the real shame, of course, is that Erling Haaland is missing those games. I don't think Norway...
But you have a well-rested Odegaard, though.
I know, but I don't think Norway have a chance, really, against this Dutch team if it comes down to that last game of the winner, you know, finish top of the group, because there's no Haaland. And I don't think they have enough without him to beat Holland, to win those two games and to finish top of the group. So it's still big, and we will be watching. But it's not the same than if Holland was there on a mission, you know, like, I'm going to qualify Norway for the first World Cup since 1998 or something like that.
My mind is spinning by the fact that it's Holland v Holland.
And big game for Spain, too, in a few hours, Gab, on Thursday against Greece or Friday, assuming they don't lose, which is a major assumption because Greece have been doing well and can still qualify, by the way. Their future will be decided when they host top of the table Sweden on Sunday. Gab, Sweden who beat them, of course, in the September international break.
In Sweden, we're going to have a certain Zlatan Ibrahimovic as well.
I think he's
going to go on the bench in the first game and then be well rested.
Ibra and Isak.
Yeah. Those are a lot of inches of striker up front.
Yeah.
Another massive Sunday game, Jules, is Croatia hosting Russia again. Croatia 2 points clear. They both play winnable games on paper in a few hours. It could all change on Sunday. And tell you what, that there is a lot of bad blood here between these two teams. You have the whole like Serbia's Russia's little brother thing going on. This is going to be really tasty.
This is going to be really, really tasty. Let's hope that they don't drop any points in between. And then the big clash on Sunday, and we watch Luka Modric and the Croatians against, you know, Golovin and the Russians, and see who tops that group and who goes into the playoff. Declan Rice is the latest England player to get injured, and we've said there's been a lot of players forfeiting those games in the national break. They're facing Albania, England, and then San Marino, but they're through already, right?
Yeah, they're through. They're pretty much in first place. I mean, it would take
something big,
something crazy, because they have a 3-point lead over Poland. It would basically take England somehow losing to Albania.
Yeah.
And then it would come down to goal difference. You're playing San Marino, so you feel good about it. Although older England fans will remember that England played San Marino many times ago,
or something like
black
that,
and white or something, and they conceded a goal without touching the ball, I believe.
After 10 seconds,
After 10 seconds, crazy. France hosts Kazakhstan tomorrow. Good vibes despite the injury, though, right, Jules?
I mean, yeah, no Pogba, of course, no Kimpembe, no Varane, but we've got N'Golo Kante back, we've got the Benzema, Mbappe, Griezmann. We're going to play a back three. You're going to love it.
I hate it when you say, well, we don't have Kimpembe, we don't have Varane. But it's okay, because you're the freaking deepest squad.
We
you can send the French C team.
It's okay, we can loan you a few centre-backs.
If only you were as deep in terms of managers.
French FA president Noël Le Graët says that in an interview with Le Parisien yesterday on Wednesday, that even if Karim Benzema is found guilty in his sex tape trial, he will still be available for selection and be picked up by France and Didier Deschamps. Are you okay with that?
Okay, so he's not going to prison regardless.
No, it's a suspended term anyway, even if he's sentenced, and a fine.
I'm okay with it because, frankly, whatever damage has been done to his reputation is already out there.
Yeah, it was
right?
6 years ago.
Even if he's cleared and they find him not guilty, people are still going to be like, oh, look, Valbuena had the weird sex tape. He was blackmailed. It was Karim's friend who did it. We may never know, right?
Yeah.
This is all out there.
Yeah,
Everybody knows this. If players don't have a problem playing with him, I don't see why anybody should. So, yes, on this occasion, I'm with you, Noel, whose name means Christmas, by the way.
Yeah, it is.
Christmas Legret. Oh, always so festive in France. Ousmane Dembélé is on his way to a new contract at Barcelona, but Jules, there's a twist.
Yeah, I think they've learned a lesson from the first contract where he didn't play much and got a lot of money. So this time it could be, okay, we pay you and we pay you well, but in relation to how many games you're going to play.
Right, this is like those cell phone contracts.
So he's going to end up on £10 a week.
Yeah?
Because, yeah.
Pay-as-you-go contract, right? You can't afford pay monthly, so you go.
Oh, March? £12 for March because you didn't play at all, man.
He shouldn't take this, by the way.
Nah.
He really shouldn't. He should laugh in their faces.
Yeah, I think it's an option, but I don't think they would be the final one. Gab, why is the homeless charity Shelter annoyed with the Premier League this week?
I find this to be extraordinarily stupid. And to be honest here, I'm actually with the Premier League on this one. So, and look, I'm not dissing Shelter. They do a lot of wonderful work.
Yeah, they do great work.
They continue to do it. But basically, they came up with a hashtag, which is something like, there is no home or something like that. And so as a result, they want on December 26th, Boxing Day fixtures, they want all the Premier League clubs to wear their away jerseys to somehow support this. I think this is so stupid. Premier League says no. Look, there's many other ways, many good things you can do.
Yeah.
But to go and then complain to the media, no, just leave it. Sergio Ramos is finally back in training for Paris Saint-Germain. Jules, waiting for him to play again felt a little bit like waiting for Godot.
4 months. That's a long time to wait. Finally, he trained with the rest of the squad. It seems okay. No calf issues, no thigh, no back, no nothing. He's 35 years old, so he's getting older. So I'm hoping that after the international break is over, he might get a few more minutes and then gradually become a starter and get what we expected him to get when he joined the club.
A couple of things. Well, first of all, so Paris Saint-Germain will finally have their penalty taker then.
Interesting, right? Yeah.
And you can
play back three now because they will have Kimpembe, Varane, Ramos.
Is it realistic that they'll go, that's all that we're going to see 3-4-3 then?
I think they're going to try, yeah.
And then
Poch feels that he's the perfect sweeper in that formation.
So, okay, Hakimi on the right, and you feel good about the left?
Nuno Mendes. Who's,
you feel good? Yeah?
Oh, yeah. He's amazing. He's young.
He's very young.
He needs to learn, but he's great going forward. That wing-back position is much better like sporting play. More than a traditional back four where he's at left back.
3-4-3 with Ramos, Verratti is going to have to do so much
running. Don't worry, he's going to take it. Czech billionaire Daniel Kretinsky has acquired a 27% stake in West Ham. Don't laugh. Gab, what does this mean?
Well, first of all, I'd love to know the background to it. Like, cause obviously, West Ham have had, historically, they've had a bunch of Czech players. I don't know if he has a particular allegiance to West Ham, because as a boy, he saw Thomas Repka there.
Yeah, only selling Soufal and
well, that's the thing.
To the club.
I think it is interesting about what it says about the owners there. Sullivan and Gold, obviously, these guys have been around forever. Not at the club, but around in football. Yeah, so they were Birmingham before. They're not getting any younger. I'm just wondering. Yeah,
this looks like a long,
is this a longer term play? Side. And this is one of the last English owned, you know, big clubs in like properly English, not Joe Louis on his yacht. It is interesting to me.
Yeah.
Daily Mail reports that Dean Henderson is unhappy with his lack of playing time and may ask for a move. He's been linked to Newcastle and others. Jules, if we had Dean on the Zoom,
Dean.
Yeah. What would you advise?
Pack your stuff and go! Go, 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 my friend. Leave that club. You're never going to play. David De Gea has gone back to his best, pretty much near his best. He still has a long contract in. Henderson is not going to play there. So go somewhere else. Get some minute. You might be back with England as well. You might...
He's
got
to go.
Revive your career. You've got to go. You've got to go.
Is it also coincidence that Dean Henderson comes back and David De Gea starts playing better? If you were unkind, you might connect the two.
Yeah. According to Gazzetta dello Sport, Milan are negotiating a new deal with Alessio Romagnoli, whose contract expires in June, without talking to his agent, Mino Raiola. So, you know, you go the back door. Gab, does this make sense to you? The new contract, I mean, not talking to Mino.
Well, they're apparently negotiating a pay cut. Romagnoli's on a big contract, and you know he's not real. Simon Kjær and Fikayo Tomori are the starters.
Yeah, he's played only like 6 games or 7 games in Serie A.
I like this attitude to take, saying like, "Look, you're a good guy to have around. We like having you here. Mm-hmm. We can't justify paying you this much. You know, is there room for a pay cut? Maybe with bonuses or whatever." And by the way, if we talk directly without Mino in the room, it might be better. I wonder too if maybe. You know, from Mino's perspective, too, he said, a little bit like the Donnarumma thing, right? Okay, let me hardball, and Romagnoli's, you know, there'll be a market for him. And now, maybe also because he's playing less, maybe there's less of a market for him.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. And he's only 26, though. So
he's still only 26. I think he's got stuff to give.
Yeah,
And you know, a lot of Milan fans are so, like, critical of him because of his lack of pace or whatever. I think he's a really good leader.
Yeah.
And Simon Kjær is not going to be around forever. And so maybe you can reinvent yourself there. Mm-hmm. I think it's the right attitude. I think they're playing this correctly, put it that way. Jules, we love Christopher Nkunku on this show.
Yeah.
According to Bild, so do Manchester City.
Oh, imagine Nkunku as a false nine with City, Bernardo, De Bruyne, Foden, Gabriel Jesus, Rodri. That would be amazing. I think they're right to look at him. I don't know how much Leipzig would ask for someone they bought for 15 million euros, I think it was. But he's so good now that I expect a big move, whether that's City or somewhere else, Bayern or whatever, big move very, very soon.
I think his combination of work ethic and fluidity and the fact that he's also got goals in him would make him...
He's such a Guardiola player, isn't he?
He would be such a natural fit over there more than others. But by the way... And you know my feelings on this. I don't see why City need to play with a false nine as soon as the real nine, Ferran Torres, is fit again. He's going right in.
Of course. Andreas Christensen is another central defender whose contract expires in June at Chelsea, like Rudiger. And he told Danish media that he's got no idea what's going on.
Okay, I'm sure if you look closely, his nose got a little bit longer. Yeah, I'm sure they're talking to the club. He's been at the club a long time. I think there's issues of leverage here going on. I've made the point that, you know, if you're Chelsea, you know, your defenders in general aren't, again, they're not getting younger. You know, you have to think in terms of Azpilicueta's not going to be around forever. Yeah. Thiago Silva's not going to be around
Certainly
forever.
Not.
Rudiger's out of contract too, so you need to sort him out, and that will probably be his last high-level contract. Yeah. They've been linked with Koundé in the past. Obviously, everybody loves Trevor Chalobah, but he hasn't played very much. So you would think Christensen, who's kind of mid-career, knows the club, would have a lot of leverage to be able to stay. I don't know if it's a question he's asking too much money or what the plans are, but I think he actually has a ton of leverage in this situation.
I agree.
So I'd be surprised if he went elsewhere. Nicolas Sule has tested positive for COVID, and as a result, Adeyemi, Gnabry, Kimmich, and Musiala all have to go into self-isolation. Jules, good thing Germany are okay without these guys for now, no?
Yeah, they are, and they already qualify. Hansi Flick then will make, you know, rotate, try different things, different players. A shame for Adeyemi, I think, because this would be the perfect time to give him more game time with the national team after he made his debut in the last international break. But you know what? If there's one time where you can do with a B team or B squads.
If you're Bayern, you're positively excited that this happens now.
You even gutted there's not more. But, so like, are you sure that Goretzka doesn't have to go home? Are you sure that Müller doesn't have to go home?
It is funny with the self-isolation, because obviously they do it on who he's been in close proximity with. It's not surprising that they'd all be Bayern players. Kimmich, Musiala, Gnabry, and of course Adeyemi. Sorry, I don't know. Yeah. But do we take it as red Adeyemi's going to be Bayern's next centre forward?
Probably. Sao Paulo have terminated Dani Alves' contract, Gab, and straight away he's been linked with a talk to return to Barcelona.
Why not?
Yeah?
Why not?
I don't know. Not to play, please. He's 39 years old. Bring something to the dressing room, experience.
He's been playing. If Marcelo can play, why can't sometimes in some games?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to ask you right now. Sergino Dest at right wing or Dani Alves?
No, don't give me that. Come on. He's as old as me almost. Come on. He hasn't played for 5 months or something. Bring him in. For sure, bring him in. He will share his experience, everything, knowledge of the league, the club.
I'd bring him in as player
coach. All the trophies, maybe, but not as an intention to play him. Obviously not.
But I think he's got a lot to give. Jules, as you know, we often Paris Saint-Germain keep regaling us with rather unusual stories. Let me put it that way. I was tempted to reference Tanya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan on this one, but this story is really ugly, if true.
Yeah, it is, Gab. As we're recording the show, Aminata Diallo, who is the PSG midfielder, is still in custody right now, interrogated by the police for being involved in an attack that her teammate, Kira Amraoui, suffered a few days ago on November the 4th, where she was dragged out of Diallo's car, where they were coming back from a PSG dinner organized by the club, and was dragged out of the car by two men in balaclavas with iron bars, who then started smashing her legs before fleeing the scene. And the police believe they've got enough evidence to link Diallo to this aggression towards her teammate Amraoui. They play in the same position, so there's that feeling of they're in competition. And we don't know yet what's going to happen, if Diallo is really involved in this, and that, you know, she...
Or it could have just been two random people.
So there's a few... The background story is starting to emerge now a bit, but it's still very ugly scenes. Amraoui could not play in the Champions League game that PSG played against Real Madrid on Tuesday night. She had to go to hospital, had stitches in her legs. It's not career-threatening, and I think they expect her to come back pretty soon.
So just imagine the mental trauma.
Exactly. So crazy, crazy story between two teammates. Antonio Conte has reportedly said Tottenham's players are overweight and banned ketchup and mayonnaise from the training ground. Gab, this feels familiar.
Yeah, look, this, we hear this all the time. It happened, it feels familiar, from Spurs too, when Pochettino took over. He's like, oh, look, they're all too fat, and so on. And
Pep at City as well.
Every manager says, oh, we're going to get them fitter, right? Yeah. I have yet to find a manager who, you know, if you ask them, are the players fit enough when they take over, especially when a guy who's been sacked? You know, no, there's always
one. It's almost like you have to find something.
Yeah, I don't understand this ketchup. I'm obviously not a dietitian. This ketchup mayonnaise, I'm sure it's not good for you, but whatever. Like,
it's not healthy.
It's not healthy, but you still have the usual cycle, right, here in England, where coach, often foreign coach, comes in, removes the ketchup and mayonnaise. Then nice English coach, yes, I'm thinking of Roy Hodgson, comes in and says, like, well, like, lift the players' spirits. Their mental health, their morale is better. Come on, man. There's more significant work to be done here, methinks.
Work.
Jules, we got to come back and do this all again on Monday, because we have a huge weekend, as we told you, a lot of high-stakes international games going on. Before we go, another high-stakes game going on.
Yeah.
Is the final of ESPN's Battle of the Leagues. Last year, of course, it was your Ligue 1 team and my Bundesliga team.
Yeah.
This year, I was, you know, I look, it was a screw job of Bret Hart proportions, let me say, in my semifinal against the Premier League and Mark Ogden. Premier League obviously stacked with talent. Mark Ogden, of course, is Mark Ogden. He's the sole star of the situation.
Exactly, the sole star of the battle of the leagues.
Yeah, we missed two penalties.
Oh,
they
no.
got nonsense penalties, nonsense handballs.
Crazy.
I had no Erling Haaland in this game.
Yeah.
I'm proud to, I told my boys, we go out of the tournament undefeated.
Definitely.
Okay, because it went in extra time, and of course, games end
heads
in 90 minutes.
High. Heads high.
In the final, you got past Kay Murray and said,
easy. Easy. Right. So now it's me against
Sorry, Ogden. Kay. You know, come
Sorry.
At the king.
There's always next year, Kay.
So I'm expecting a round humiliation Mark Ogden in the final.
Like tiki-taka football. We've got such a great team. We're going to play them out of the park and then win. I mean, they might get a bit of luck because that's what he's had so far. Let's
he's
be
had
honest.
A ton of luck.
So much luck against you in the semi-final, against in the group stage as well.
He lost to the Eredivisie.
He went behind against Serie A, lost to Eredivisie. I mean, it's crazy that he's even there in the competition. So don't worry, I'll avenge you.
What I can tell you, a bit of scouting intel. Remember last year, because he thought he was so clever, he started like Rui Patricio and Emi Buendia.
He's a waste of time.
He doesn't do this now. Now he's gone chalk. He's packs in as many big names as possible.
Don't worry.
You can tell he's terrified.
I've got this.
All right, so that's coming up too. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.